I'm John Kroll. 2 days ago, we lost one of the giants of Indiana history. Richard Lugar, a former Indianapolis school board member, Indianapolis mayor, and six-term U.S. senator, died Sunday. The Republican was 87. Today on No Limits, we will explore Senator Lugar's life and legacy with people from virtually every chapter of his life. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. Today on No Limits, we are going to be celebrating the life and legacy of the late U.S. Senator Richard Lugar. Senator Lugar died Sunday, just 2 days ago, at the age of 87. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests for this first segment, and we're going to have people coming in from virtually every chapter of Senator Lugar's life, are former U.S. Representative Lee Hamilton, who is joining us by phone, an Indiana author and state treasurer, as well as a lifelong friend and Shortridge classmate of Senator Lugar's, Dan Wakefield. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you. So let me ask, I'll start with Representative Hamilton. What were your thoughts when you heard of Senator Lugar's passing?
Well, of course, I was immediately saddened, because we had been close associates and friends for six or maybe seven decades. But I then had thoughts of gratitude for the extraordinary contributions that he made over his remarkable decades of service. He was an extraordinary leader, made the world a better place, more peaceful for sure. He was a model public servant. He had high intelligence and impeccable integrity. So all of these things rushed through my mind as I heard of his passing.
Dan, same question to you. What were your thoughts?
Well, it's ironic. I had planned for several months. Dick and I were going to have lunch yesterday. And it was only when I heard from his assistant about a week ago that he'd gone into the hospital. So I was shocked and, like everyone, saddened. I think he was really one of the few men of our time that deserves to be called great. And I think especially now, because he embodied bipartisanship and made a career of working across the aisle to get great accomplishments done. And that sort of seems to be a thing of the past.
One of the things that that strikes me, and I should say that I have reported on Senator Lugar's career for decades myself and know the man not as well as the two of you, but did know him, is just the sheer range of people that he knew and had relationships with. That, you know, there seemed to be very few parts of Indiana life or whatever. And I realize some of that is part of being a politician. But what I'll start with Dan on this. What drew you to him, and what do you think drew so many people to Richard Lugar?
Well, when you talk about the people he knew, part of that is he was so thoughtful. He was thoughtful of everyone. And I think every one of our classmates would agree to that. At one point, he had the whole class come to Washington when he was in the Senate and entertained them there. I knew from the time I first met him when we were freshmen at Shortridge, and he took me home to his house and showed me his room with a desk with perfectly neat tablets and pencils laid out in a row. And I had been in a class with him, and I that night said to my parents, you know, there's a boy in our class who's going to be president. And they said, you mean president of your class? I said, no, president of the United States. And I think he should have been, and I'm sorry he wasn't.
Representative Hamilton, same question to you. What drew you to him? What made your relationship click? Because you often were the two guys they sent into a room to work out differences between parties. What made that work, and what drew people to Dick Lugar?
Well, I think a couple of things come to mind, probably more than that, but he had a remarkable civility about him. Treated people with all kinds of people, whether in the Oval Office or talking to the tomato pickers in Scott County or the steel workers in Gary or his fellow senators. He treated all people with decency and respect. In addition to that, I think I was attracted by his grasp of substance. He brought a very keen intellect to the problems of the day, not just foreign policy, but domestic as well. He analyzed things. He had a remarkable capacity to set politics aside and focus on the very pragmatic aspects of developing policy to meet the challenges that the country faced. And he did that in a manner which I attribute in part to his love of Indiana. There was a lack of pretense, down-to-earthness, a kind of a straight-shooter person. You knew you were dealing with the real person when you dealt with Dick Lugar. He was never disingenuous. So he had qualities that didn't overwhelm you. He was not a colorful person. He was not a stem-winding orator. Nobody would accuse him of that, I think. But he had a substantive manner about him, a decency, a seriousness to try to search for a remedy to our problems that attracted me and that attracted, I think, thousands of other Hoosiers. And not just, of course, in Indiana or not just in Washington, but I think across the world. I continually would run into diplomats around the world who spoke with great affection and appreciation for Dick Lugar.
We are talking about the life and legacy of the late U.S. Senator Richard Lugar today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. One of the things that struck me through the years is I never seemed to see Richard Lugar get frustrated or upset. Now, I was not part of his inner circle. Didn't have, I think, the levels of intimacy that the two of you did, but I got to admit, I just was part of a team putting together a documentary on the senator's life, which is going to be rebroadcast tonight on WFYI's television side, Channel 20 at 9 p.m. It was called Richard Lugar, Reasons Quiet Warrior, and actually Dan Wakefield and Lee Hamilton both were in the documentary. But one of my frustrations in the reporting there is I kept asking people that question, does this guy ever get frustrated or blow his stack or anything like that? Did Dan go ahead?
Well, one of his qualities that a lot of people don't know is he had a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite lines, when my novel Going All the Way came out in 1970 and was very controversial in Indianapolis. And it happened to be the 20th reunion of our Shortridge class. And Luger was a speaker, and I was too chicken to come to that one. And I asked a friend, I said, did Luger say anything about Going All the Way? And she said, yes, someone asked him if he had read the book, and he said, I received it in a plain brown wrapper. But we wrote rival sports columns in the Shortridge Daily Echo. His was called Shooting the Works, and mine was called Sportlight. And he started calling me Sportlight, so I started calling him Shooting. And that was and we critiqued each other's work and made fun of each other's styles. But he was a lot of fun to be with.
Representative Hamilton, I mean, you worked with him in some incredibly tense situations. Did you ever see the guy lose his temper or grow frustrated?
No, yeah. I did not. I think your observation is absolutely on target. He understood the complexity and the difficulties of the problems that you confront in international relations. He did not expect miracles. He did not get frustrated. He did not blow his fuse. He persevered, kept plodding along, step by step. There are many problems you can't solve. He understood that. There are other problems you can't solve completely, but you can take incremental steps. He understood that as well. So he brought a very level-headed approach to public policy questions. And no, I never saw him frustrated. It was always, let's see if we can solve this problem in front of us. And he did his level best time and time again to move towards a solution to a problem and recognize that blowing your fuse, attacking your opponent, didn't get you anywhere. You had to just tackle the problem and keep persevering in your search for a solution and a remedy.
And Representative Hamilton, I know you have to to step off in a few minutes. I want to ask, though, before you have to leave us, at a personal level, since you worked with him in ways that most of us never saw, what are you going to miss most?
Well, his friendship. We were close associates for a long period of time, engaged in the rather contentious business of politics. I'll miss his civility. I'll miss his decency. I'll miss the style as much, I guess, as the substance that he brought to the public dialogue. This was an exceptional person, quite apart from his achievements, which were remarkable, and his legacy, and for which he deserves high praise. But if I were to meet him and he was a scientist or a doctor or a lawyer or whatever, I would recognize the qualities in the man that made him an exceptional human being.
Dan, I ask you the same question. I mean, what are you going to miss most about your friendship goes back 75 years almost, right?
Excuse me, Dan, for breaking in, but I will have to depart. Thank you, John, for letting me join you briefly.
Oh, thank you very much, Representative Hamilton. Bye. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, I will miss his sense of humor. And we really were able to find humor in a lot of things. And he also was so, went out of his way to be helpful to friends. And I was very surprised pleasantly when a couple years ago a park in Broad Ripple was named after me. And Luger came and gave a talk at the opening of the park. and talked in a very funny way about our high school friendship and rivalry.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the life and legacy of the late U.S. Senator Richard Lugar, who died 2 days ago on Sunday at the age of 87. We've been talking with former United States Representative Lee Hamilton, a Democrat from Indiana, and Dick Lugar's high school classmate and renowned Indiana author Dan Wakefield. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. Today on No Limits, we're celebrating the life and legacy of the late U.S. Senator Richard Lugar, who died 2 days ago on Sunday. He was 87 years old. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guest now is Richard Lugar's Shortridge High School classmate and friend from the time that they were 14 years old, renowned Indiana author Dan Wakefield. We hope to be joined as this hour progresses. It's almost like a calling of members of the extended Lugar Nation calling in and sharing their stories and their reminiscences of Richard Lugar. So, Dan, there is a charming story you have told me in the past, and I'd like you to share it for the audience, about how you and Richard Lugar, and I think it was one of the formative experiences in the development of your friendship,
yes,
went to a journalism camp together and had this talk.
Yes.
I don't want to ruin things any more than that.
Yes. Well, we both were selected as representatives of the Shortridge Daily Echo to go to a journalism convention, a state convention in French Lick. And we were assigned a room. We shared a room together. And at night, we would get into the twin bed, and we would talk. And we would talk seriously. And Lugar would turn the lights out, and he would pray. And I was very impressed with that, because most teenage boys don't have the courage to, in front of another boy, say, "I'm going to say my prayers now." But we also talked about our dreams. And he asked me, if you could be anything in high school, what would you be? And I said, well, if I could be anything, I'd be high point man on the basketball team. And Lugar laughed and said, "Oh, Dan, you're so frivolous." He was right. And I said, well, what would you want to be? And he wanted to be president of the senior class, first in the class academically, all the things of achievement that would be there for him.
We are joined now by former Indianapolis Mayor Stephen Goldsmith. Mayor Goldsmith, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
Certainly.
Nice to be here.
It's good to have you here with us. Dan Wakefield, who's in the studio with me right now, just related a story about how seriously Richard Lugar took his responsibilities even back in high school. And you had some evidence of that from your own days in high school. Could you talk a little bit about the first contact you ever had with Richard Lugar?
Ah, you've done your research.
I have.
So I was a Broad Ripple High School student. I, unlike Dan and Dick, I guess I couldn't get into Shortridge. I was a Broad Ripple High School student. And, I got elected student council president because I was eager to get into politics even at that age. And I got this handwritten note from the president of the Indianapolis School Board, or I think that was her chairman of the Indianapolis School Board, Dick Lugar, congratulating me and encouraging me to have that be my first step into a lifetime of public service, and how pleased he was about it. Now, I don't know how many of those letters he wrote, but I assumed it was I was the only one and kept it for, I bet, 20 years as I matriculated through the political wars. It was a special thing for me and important in my career.
What made it special for you?
Well, you know, first of all, it helped me begin to watch Dick Lugar, right? Which is, I mean, obviously not what he intended, but you know, I went to Wabash College and he was running for mayor, and so that was important. Secondly, that you know, a person in a leadership position takes enough interest in what's going on with folks in their system, like I was just a high school student, right? Mm-hmm. That he's going to write these letters. It just struck me as personal and inspirational. So a combination between watching him and being inspired by that just made a big difference to me.
Do you recall the first time you met him?
Well, I'm not sure because I've conflated a lot of things. My mother and father disagreed on politics on every subject except Dick Lugar, and they both were out when he ran for mayor the first time, handing out things and, you know, stuffing envelopes in church basements and the like. And I think tagging along with one of those times was the first. But then I had an opportunity to do a little work in the city legal department when Mayor Lugar was mayor. So I've been in his in his shadows for a long time.
And I want to ask both of you this. What you know, I think that story that Mayor Goldsmith told about his parents speaks to a lot of Indiana history, frankly, at least regarding Richard Lugar, is that as much as Hoosiers might disagree about a lot of things, for many years they agreed on Richard Lugar and probably continued to even after he left office. The documentary we did on Richard Lugar that's airing tonight again on Channel 20, WFYI, there's a moment where former U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly pretty much admits that, you know, if Lugar hadn't been taken out in the primary, I couldn't have beat him. that just wouldn't have happened. So what was it about him that made him so appealing to people who, you know, otherwise might disagree with him politically? I'll let Dan answer that one first, but I want to hear Mayor Goldsmith's thoughts, too.
Yes. Well, what Mayor Goldsmith said reminded me of his thoughtfulness, which was really remarkable. And I have a friend in Bloomington, Ian Woolen, who's a therapist and writer, and he at one point said he had a new boy in town who was rather troubled and seemed to feel he had a bad reputation. And Ian suggested to him that he write to a number of leaders that he'd heard of and asked them how they had handled that thing. And the boy wrote to about 50 different national and local leaders, and the only one who answered was Dick Lugar, who told him about his own feelings about that and his own experience. I just thought that was amazing, but that was typical of his thoughtfulness.
Mayor Goldsmith.
First of all, I want to complain about being asked to tell stories with Dan Wakefield as the other person telling stories. I mean, this is just like totally unfair, but we'll continue regardless. So a couple quick thoughts. One, and this is my bias, I think mayors tend to be more pragmatic to begin with, right? They run places, they need to get things done. I think Dick, I know, viewed his responsibility to all his constituents, not just the group that elected him. So, you know, what is his responsibility there? Third, I think there's a lot to be said for someone who's respected for his intellect and reason, right? Because even if you disagree, you know, it's a thoughtful position that's put out there to accomplish a purpose. And then lastly, I think the fact that he was moderate in tone and focused on getting things done allowed him to reach across the aisle and create these coalitions that were important, and he maintained that through his entire career.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the life and legacy of the late U.S. Senator Richard Lugar. If you would like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or do what a listener named Susan has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make actually 4 points, but I can be very fast.
Okay.
One, I appreciated Senator Lugar as he got older and I got older. He truly was a great person and did so much for the country and actually the world. Second thing, he was the first Republican I ever voted for, and I haven't voted for very many. So he impressed me even when he was running for senator. The third thing I wanted to mention, his run that he had at Butler. Mm-hmm. I did several of those, and I was impressed by, I mean, he covered everything, politics, sports, fitness. He was really, well, he just did so much. I did my best run at his 5K.
Okay.
So I remember him for that.
Okay.
Too. The last thing, I think it's disgraceful, the Senate, when he was up against Murdoch and lost, that was a true loss for everyone. And I was just really sorry about that. So I just wanted to mention those things. He truly was an impressive person, and he will be missed.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mayor Goldsmith, in your time, has there ever been, another Indiana politician who's had that kind of hold on people?
Yeah, thanks for the question. I may maybe close with that question, John, before I take off. I don't know about the answer to that question. I mean, in the way you asked it, in terms of hold, I don't think there's been another Indiana politician who has combined vision and empathy with effectiveness in the way that Dick Lugar did, right? Because, you know, think about Indianapolis today, right? I mean, it's, you get elected mayor, and then the Unigov vision, the role, I was recently at an anniversary program about IUPUI, right? The emergence of IUPUI and its connection to the downtown. And that was another Dick Lugar vision, the ability to kind of see broadly, whether it's, the nuclear work with Senator Nunn, all of those things represent the application of intellect and vision to produce results. And I think the reason that the lady who just spoke before me, my guess is, felt the way she did is because here's a person who cares about people, is actually doing stuff that makes the world better. And my whole career was motivated by and inspired by him. So I may not be the average person, but I think that combination of characteristics is unique. I hope we move back that direction over time.
Thank you. I know you have to run as well. Thank you very much for spending this time with us and sharing your memories of Senator.
Yeah, thanks for taking on your show. I appreciate it.
Certainly. Take care. We are joined now by Indiana Commissioner of Higher Education Teresa Lubbers, and also former state senator, and early on a staff member with Senator Lugar. Commissioner Lubbers, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be with you to talk about such a great man.
It's good to have you here. Could you talk about, I've talked with you in other circumstances about Senator Lugar, and I know that the wells of affection you have for him are deep. Could you talk a little bit about what he meant to you?
You know, I've had the opportunity to share with him what he meant to me, which means so much to me, even as recently as a month ago, I had a chance to tell him that again. You know, I was a 17-year-old high school junior when I had my first experience with Dick Lugar. I came downtown, and for some reason, he accepted my ask to let me interview him on a paper I was doing in high school. And long story short, I had this great interview with him and proceeded to head home and realized I hadn't hit the right button on the recorder and hadn't recorded any of it. So it was one of my first memories that I was just, I immediately started writing down everything I could remember. But, from that started, each of my summers when I was in college, I worked in city government and for the Department of Transportation. And this was during the time that, city leadership was so important. And there were a lot of exciting things happening in cities across the country. And none, I think, that actually excelled what we were doing under Mayor Lugar's leadership in Indianapolis. So it really lit a fire in me that has continued for, like Steve Goldsmith, for more than four decades. Had the opportunity to work for him during his final 2 years as mayor as his public information officer, and during that time worked on my first campaign when Lugar ran against Birch Bayh, and then continued after we left the mayor's office. Mitch Daniels and I opened up his campaign office early January of 1976, and I've said to several people, we were actually criticized for campaigning too long for an election for the United States Senate that would be that November. And the cycles of campaigning have certainly changed dramatically since then. But a long story short, then had the opportunity to work in his Senate office, and then 1990 co-founded with Judy Singleton the Lugar Excellence in Public Service series designed to get more women involved in politics and government. And so for each of those years, he has been a touch point in my life, and as I said to him, I've always used him as the standard and thought, would he be proud of what I'm doing? And I wanted to behave in a way and serve in a way that he would be.
When did you realize that he was an exceptional figure in your life? I mean, this goes beyond, and you have been around. You've known an awful lot of politicians as well.
Right. I think part of it, what for me was, it is so easy to hold people in high regard in high places from a distance. It's not always the case when you have the opportunity to work with them on a daily basis that same feeling exists for you. And I don't know one person who ever worked for Dick Lugar who did not maintain that same high regard for him and the fact that he never disappointed us. I mean, that's a pretty extraordinary thing. And he invested in us personally. I mean, I was reading about former staffers, where he would, there'd be an event in their lives and you could count on getting a handwritten note for him. My father died 4 years ago, exactly the same age as Dick Lugar. And at the end of the calling, I looked up and there walked in Dick Lugar to my father's calling. And I said, oh my gosh, I can't even believe that you came. And he just looked at me and said, well, I wouldn't be anyplace else. So I think, and I also heard Steve Goldsmith talking about this. I mean, those are personal stories that speak to his character. And when you have someone who's has that kind of extraordinary character and combined with this unbelievable intellect and vision and clarity about what needed to be done to make life better for people. So it was both personal, and then he managed to take that personal concern that he had for people and really pass policies and programs that made a difference in people's lives. That's extraordinary.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the life and legacy of former United States Senator Richard Lugar, who died on Sunday. I'm talking now with Indiana author and Lugar classmate Dan Wakefield and former Lugar staffer and Indiana Commissioner of Higher Education Teresa Lubbers. We're going to continue the conversation after this break. If you want to join it, please call us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the life and legacy of the late U.S. Senator Richard Lugar, who died Sunday at the age of 87. My guests now are Indiana author and Dick Lugar's high school classmate from Shortridge High School, class of 1950, Dan Wakefield, and longtime friend, former staffer, currently Indiana Commissioner of Higher Education, Teresa Lubbers. Commissioner Lubbers, I'm going to cut to the chase on this one. One of the things that that we could not get into the documentary that we did about Senator Lugar's life, charming story you told that I did not know, and will shed a different, slightly different kind of light on the senator's life. What was his favorite movie?
He loved Animal House, which he is, I know no one believes that that is the movie that he loved, but he loved that movie and he would laugh, belly laugh with that movie. And I'm not sure why, except that I think it had fond memories of his fraternity days at Denison.
Okay. Were you around him when he would do the belly laughing? I mean, what was that experience like?
You know, I wasn't, but I have heard enough times of people who were that that I know it was true, and he would tell that story himself sometimes, and it's a great story, and it does say a lot about him. You know, he's he didn't always tell a joke, but he told a great story, and I think that's that gave him the ability to really connect with people. And you know, I think when he told the Animal House story, people chuckled.
Dan, does that surprise you at all?
No. I was talking earlier about that he always had a great sense of humor, and that was one of his hallmarks. A lot of people didn't realize that somebody involved in these great national world issues could have a great sense of humor, but he did. I think a great sense of humor is part of somebody's intellect as well.
What, Dan, you know— one of the things that keeps coming back here that we talk about is a term that is used an awful lot in politics these days, but in a different way, of authenticity. But there seemed to be something about Lugar that that was just, you know, for a guy who was as guarded and as disciplined in his expression and intellectual approach to life, was incredibly direct and honest, too.
He never pretended to be anything else. He didn't try to make himself into some high school popular image or something. He did what he had to do. He contributed. And one of the things that most early, I think, impressed me, in when we were seniors, there was a tradition at Shortridge that a group of 30 senior boys put on the graduation dance and picked the orchestra and charge of the money and profits and all that. And at the last meeting, when we were dividing up our small profits, Lugar says, well, you know, we have to report this to the federal income tax. People said, what? We never even thought about it. They were seniors in high school. And I realized, oh, yeah, he's already thinking ahead to when he runs for president. Somebody will find out that when he was in high school, he didn't report this from the grad dance. So
was he, I mean, was he always that way in terms of, I'm going to ask both of you this, because that's the other thing is, you know, to use the cliche, they talk about people who play checkers and people who play chess. It's like Dick Lugar always seemed to be playing three-dimensional chess. I mean, he was seeing things that other people just couldn't seem to see. I'll start with Dan, but I want to hear Commissioner Lubber's thoughts on that as well.
Well, he, I mean, not many people, I think, would be writing a sports column that was trying to be first in the class, which he was. Wrote even a book about our football team that won the city championship. And he was a man of many parts. And one of my images that always remained was that I remember covering a junior varsity football game. There's about 20 people there, and Luger was playing fullback. And I remember them giving him the ball, and he just battering himself into the line to make 2 yards. And I thought, boy, that's Luger. You know, whatever he does, he's going to do it all out without any regard for himself.
Commissioner Lubbers, that quality of being able to see beyond the horizon, was that always part of his makeup?
Well, from the time that I knew him, which has been 40 years, yes, and Dan would know him even before that. I think one of the things that allowed him to do that is that he was a great writer. And I think when you can write well, that means you have to be able to think about things in a complex kind of way. And so, you know, he would read 13 papers a day, and then he wrote. And to be able to write the way he did, I think, gave him clarity of thought and purpose that a lot of people who serve in the public sector simply don't have. I mean, whenever you have to commit yourself to putting words down and figuring out what that means, it is a hard process, and he waded his way through that. And from that, he had clarity. And the other thing I just want to say is that sometimes I think that people mistake Luger's gracious manner and his demeanor and don't realize just how bold and innovative and creative his ideas were and how tenacious he was in putting them forward. So he had that way of making he got you there where you needed to be with him, and you felt good about it at the end. But he got what he wanted. He got you where he wanted you to be. And I'm not sure, exactly how he did that. I also think, and Dan would probably know better about this than I would, but it's the way he was raised too. I mean, those of us who knew Bertha, I didn't know his father, but I knew Bertha, and you knew that the expectation for performance and integrity was very high in his family.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the life and legacy of the late U.S. Senator Richard Luger. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Angela has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Angela, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to share a remembrance. When I was in college, I was an intern in Senator Luger's office. And a lot of people may know that he saved a lot of money by combining offices with Senator Dan Quayle. But what people don't know is that he also worked with then Congressman Andy Jacobs. I found out by meeting some of Jacobs' staff that working in constituent services, that a lot of citizens would write both to their senator as well as their congressperson if they needed help with Social Security or a variety of different things. And we went to the senator and asked if we could combine efforts, and he wholeheartedly supported the endeavor, one, so that constituents wouldn't have to wait longer, but also, in bipartisanism and also to just be as effective as he could. And today, when you have so much division, I just think it's wonderful that in the, early 80s, Senator Luger was doing this. And I just wanted to share that.
Thank you very much for calling and sharing that story, Angela.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. What, Commissioner Lubbers, where do you think that commitment to, that sounds almost like a term that isn't used much now, but, the whole idea of the good government types from the early part of the 20th century through the middle part of the 20th century, when that was kind of a rallying cry, that same sort of spirit seemed to animate Richard Luger. Where do you think that came from?
Well, he was a problem solver. I think he saw, he looked for opportunities to solve problems, and he chose to spend his career and his life in a public arena where he could solve problems, and by doing that, he could improve people's lives. This is a little different than the question you're asking, but one of the things that always amazed me about him is he really didn't see class or gender or race in people. He saw people. And I remember when we came to him with the idea of the Luger series in 1990, And we had breakfast with him that day, and we presented this idea that we wanted this leadership program for women so they'd be more involved. And it was, you know, some people, you know, what are these? This was 30 years ago. And so some questioned our motives and what we were doing. He didn't question it for a moment. He just simply looked at us and said, well, why wouldn't I want to be associated with this program? If you really believe in the full participation of people in politics and government, you need everybody, and we need more women. And he didn't calculate that there was a risk in doing this. He just saw that it was a great idea. He could, you know, so I think that does speak to his problem-solving kind of way that I always experienced with him. He thought that there was something we could do better, and then he went about the task of finding out how to do it.
Dan, did he always have that kind of egalitarian spirit, even going back to high school?
Yes, there wasn't any. You know, a lot of people thought Shortridge was snobs or elitist or something, but nobody at Shortridge got ahead by saying their family had more money. Nobody knew what the other person had. That just didn't enter the calculation. And one of the things I wanted to say about his courage later on, one of the things that most struck me was when Reagan sent him to oversee the Philippine elections. Mm-hmm. And Reagan said that Marcos had won, and Lugar, having seen that a lot of the election returns weren't honest, declared that Corazon Aquino had won. And he was on national television, and he was asked, Senator Lugar, the president says Marcos has won. And Lugar said, the president is mistaken. I thought, man, did that take guts, talking about the most popular Republican president of our time.
And that kind of fortitude did kind of define, I mean, he was not afraid to stand alone, was he, Commissioner Lubbers?
He wasn't. And I think in some ways, the collegiality that sometimes exists in a political arena, sometimes it's real and sometimes it's not. And sometimes it's, you know, it's based on what I can get from a relationship. That's just not the way he operated. He wasn't a part of a club. That's not the way he saw being involved in the United States Senate. He saw it as a group of people who, you know, he could work with to get something done. Some, obviously, he had closer relationships with than others. But he was his own person. And he, you know, I think the result of that was that he went through the hard work of figuring out, what is it that I really believe? And once I believe it and I have a reason to believe it, I'm going to stand for that. And that's, as Dan gave the example of the Philippines, it's a great example. That's the way he was. He didn't seek out opportunities to be an obstructionist or a contrarian, but when presented with an opportunity to stand for what he knew he believed in was right, he was going to do it.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Tom, and again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Tom writes, one of the highly overlooked aspects of Dick Lugar's life that would have changed him and the country, if not the world, dramatically, was his ill-fated run for the President of the United States. Unfortunately, it never got off the ground due to the immediate focus of all media and our citizens on the horrific events of the very same day as this announcement, the Oklahoma City bombing of the FBI building by Timothy McVeigh, a tragic juxtaposition of timing that prevented any awareness of Dick Lugar's run beyond Central Indiana. I remember I was covering the Lugar announcement that day for the Indianapolis News and Indianapolis Star, and that news was so big that Lugar's announcement, which we planned to have all over the front page, got buried down in the bottom right corner, right-hand corner, if I recall correctly, of the front page. You know, I'm going to, if I could, Tom, take your email and ask instead, what kind of president do you think he would have made? Commissioner Lubbers, and then I want to hear Dan's thoughts.
Well, I remember that day well, too, John, because my husband was running, you know, the senator's ill-fated presidential campaign. And so we were there with our young daughters and watching everything and watched, you know, exactly, it happened exactly as the way that you explained it. You know, he had the opportunity to do something that I think he'd always wanted to do, which was to run for president of the United States. And I, you know, it's hard to play out what that would have meant in terms of policy. I'm convinced he would have been an extraordinarily talented, great president, that he would have continued to build, you know, this whole legacy around foreign relations and a safer world. But he also managed to understand really well local government and agriculture policy and things that were closer to home, which is why I think Hoosiers allowed him to be able to play on the world stage at the same time that he was taking care of Hoosiers at home. So, you know, my inelegant way of answering your question is I can only say out of, you know, my personal affection and bias is I think he would have been an extraordinary president. Too bad we didn't have a chance to see that happen.
And we are joined now by Purdue University president and former Indiana governor, Mitch Daniels. President Daniels, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Apologize for being a little late calling in.
Not a problem. We've got just a couple of minutes. I know that Senator Lugar was a profoundly important figure in your life and career. Since we only have a couple of minutes left, what were the most important lessons he taught you?
Oh, I think character, truthfulness, goodwill, malice toward none, goodwill toward all. He lived those ideals in a way that most of us can't or can only hope to approach. He set a model for people like Teresa and me and others to emulate in every way. I remember, John, that in running for public office, the one time I did, the last question of the last debate was, you know, who do you admire most? And it was so easy, such an easy question for me. I said Dick Lugar because he embodied the intellectual brilliance, the work ethic, tireless, just never, almost never took a day off. But most of all, the character that he brought to public decision making, and that I think he left us that maybe as important as any of his many accomplishments in public life.
And since we have just a little bit of time left, I'm going to exercise a point of personal privilege here and say that the first time I ever interviewed Richard Lugar was when I was a high school student back in 1976, and I was at a journalism camp. The important thing you need to know, and I think the audience needs to know about that, is that by definition, Richard Lugar was showing up in a year he was running for the U.S. Senate against Vance Hartke. He won that election at a place where there were absolutely no votes for him, that was filled with high school students, and he spent an entire afternoon with us, answered every question, including a particularly inane one from me. The last time I ever spoke with him was the day we learned that Birch Bayh had died, and he called to offer his thoughts and a tribute to a man who had beat him in the 1974 Senate race and talked about him with affection. Those two stories, I think, tell an awful lot about the man. I'd like to thank all of my guests for what has been an exploration of the life and legacy of Richard Lugar. An hour was not enough to do justice to a man this large. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations. We'll be right back.